from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, a story aired Friday here on KQED, put out by the California Report, and you can get it on kqed.org, all about hybrid or blended learning. And what kind of learning is that? Well, it's learning that combines computer time with classroom time, and it's growing and quite possibly changing the nature of education here in Northern California and beyond. Rocketship, for example, is a fast-expanding, innovative charter organization operating 5 charter schools right here in Northern California, which include blended learning, and San Jose has approved the opening of 25 more in Santa Clara County to open in 2017 and 2018. In this half-hour segment, we want to find out all about hybrid or blended learning, and helping us to do that are a couple of our own, a couple of KQED's finest. Anna Tentakulis here with us, education reporter for KQED News. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you.
And also with us in studio is Tina Barsagian, and she is an editor of Mindshift, a KQED blog that covers education and technology, which you can find out all about by going to mindshift.kqed.org. Tina, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Tina, let me begin with you. A lot of this is, probably old stuff where education is concerned, computer games to learn about reading and math more, but this is more a kind of, it seems, redefining of a teacher's role. Teachers are more of a guide here, aren't they? And it's more student-centric.
That's right. What Rocketship has done in creating this kind of engineered school day is using computer games where students can practice math exercises and reading exercises. And in class, the teacher's role is now more to introduce higher-order thinking skills and critical thinking skills and concepts and fundamentals rather than just handing out busy work, as we say in the report.
More personalized, too, though.
Much more personalized. They get to figure out where the kids have any kind of deficit in understanding of the problems based on the data they get from the computer games, and they can work individually with students on helping them catch up and explain things that they may have missed.
Tina, a lot of the results are mixed. You got many different models for this. I mean, across the board, when we talk about hybrid learning.
That's right. Well, results actually for Rocketship have been quite good. They're scoring high on the API index, which I think a lot of the schools are averaging somewhere in the high 800s, and some of them actually in the 900s.
A lot of these are immigrant kids?
That's right. So low-income immigrant families. And so to compare them to the Palo Alto School District, which is a much wealthier neighbor, the fact that they're actually catching up to that affluent demographic is quite something, I think.
So we're talking about the possibility of actually doing something for the achievement gap. This is, Tentakulis, this is a highly engineered block schedule, often an adaptive software, really.
Yeah, it is. And I think that because Tina is so steeped in education technology and how it is changing the way kids learn, I'm more of like the generalist. You know, I see what's happening across California and different reforms and different ways to get kids to improve. And so going into this classroom with Tina and what resulted in our report, I was just struck myself with the fact that you have this dedicated space where you have all these little kids at their little terminals with their little headphones on, and they're just clicking away and doing their worksheets or their assignments for the day. And it's a deliberate attempt to break down the school day, which is not happening in many schools across California. Break down the school day and say, for a big part of the day, you're going to be in this lab and you're going to be learning from this computer software. And for the other part of the day, you're going to be learning for your teacher. So there's a very distinct separation between learning. And I just find that really fascinating. And we'll see if it catches on with other kind of charter schools or even with larger public school districts.
Well, there are plans for 20 more campuses, as I said in the introduction. Let's hear from one of these little kids.
Yeah.
It teaches us how to read and asks us a lot of questions.
Then if you do good, you go on to the next level.
Yeah, they make it fun.
I like it because they're fun and there's a lot of easy questions.
It is pretty easy.
Now, those were kids where, Anna?
This was at the Rocketship School in Palo Alto.
San Jose.
San Jose. And there were, computer games always get kids kind of jazzed, and this is why Rocket Ship, it seems to be, is finding success, because kids just, they're drawn to it, and they live, this is their lives now. This is how they, you know, take in information and interact with other people. And I think it's funny, though, you know, some kids say the problems are easier in lab, you know, I can kind of get through it a lot easier. And others genuinely say, you know, they like teacher time, too. They do like teacher time. It's not all about just computers. So the kids we just heard, you know, they like it a lot. But you'll hear others that also like spending time with their teacher. And I think that's the big tension here is like, is online learning as good as face-to-face teaching? And that's
it's been the question all along about online learning, and with these bleak budgets that we have and teacher shortages, of course.
But this is pushing it down to like really young grades, like elementary school grades. We get that like maybe for college students and high school students, but we're talking about first grade, second grade, third grade kids, and that's quite unusual.
What about the admissions and selection? I mean, that's always been a kind of controversy with charter schools, Tina.
Yeah, and that's sort of what Rocket Ship's tactic has been is, you know, I think like most charter schools, they go into a neighborhood they see that needs something like this, low-income neighborhoods mostly, and they recruit from the parents. You know, they put out the effort of trying to convince parents that this kind of school is necessary. And at this point, actually a few months ago when I spoke to them, they had not turned away any students yet. So they're definitely in growth mode.
I know, Anna, that the argument here is that you get maybe better teaching fundamentals. You get kids who are doing something, as you indicated earlier, that they're used to doing, and it's comfortable for them and so forth. But you're also maybe giving them a message to be too dependent upon computers, because they are, with games and all sorts of things.
Well, that's the big argument, is that there's a valid concern, and even experts say that there's a valid concern that kids are getting too much screen time, not only at school, but just in their personal lives. And, you know, you add the hours of screen time they may be getting in their personal lives. You combine that with about a 90-minute block sessions at a place like Rocket Ship, and that's, you know, that's a big part of a young child's life.
See, too many kids sitting looking at a screen for long periods of time, because mostly they're playing games in many years, or they're communicating by email or whatever, and this can reinforce it even more.
I think so. And actually, if we could hear from a mother that has a student at Rocket Ship right now, she was ambivalent, as many parents are possible, you know, when they hear about this type of learning. And this is what she had to say, and let her say it.
What they're learning here is not video games, so it's actually reading a book on the computer, and then you do like a quick quiz, and then if you pass it, you go on to the next level. So it's just like challenging for them, but it's not games or video games. I know the video games that they usually have at home or on the computers at home, they're more violent, so this is all basic, just, you know, to learn.
And that was, that was Juanita Rodriguez, and her son attends the San Jose Rocket Ship School.
Well, the San Francisco School Board recently voted to reject the Rocket Ship charter. The state overturned the decision. What were the concerns here in San Francisco?
Well, I think the big concern here is that Rocket Ship is going to counties. They're going to county school board, the school board of a county level, and saying, we want to open up this many Rocket Ship schools, instead of going to individual school districts and saying, we'd like to open up this school in your district. And so many superintendents feel like it's kind of a franchise approach to opening these schools, and that it's beyond their control. You know, the County Board of Education will approve 20. And then here you have a district like San Francisco saying, wait, you know, where is our role in this? Where is our say in this? Because in effect, these Rocket Ship schools and other charter schools, for that matter, they siphon school kids away from district schools. And so there is where lies the tension of, you know, going to a county level, asking for all these schools, and superintendents feel like it's beyond their control, like they have no way to maybe get those students back.
So maybe the big question, Tina, is can this be replicated on a large scale in California?
Well, definitely that's the goal, I think, for Rocket Ship. They have gotten lots of funding from Silicon Valley. They got $3 million just last year.
Waiting for Superman must have helped, too. Huh?
I'm not sure if it would have helped one way or the other. But yeah, they've gotten a huge influx of cash from CEOs of Silicon Valley companies like Facebook, Netflix, and Skype. So they are planning to grow. In terms of whether it can be replicated in, you know, large urban public school districts, I think the point of bringing a school like Rocket Ship, as we talked about, is to address the achievement gap. And at this point, the way they are poised to grow, it looks like they can do it.
Well, they're doing it in Riverside, aren't they?
Riverside is actually very forward-thinking, progressive school district in terms of technology. And they do use technology in very big and bold ways. And computer software is definitely part of it.
Do we know, have any idea how prevalent blended learning is in the public schools in general in California?
I would say it's starting to get more and more common, although it's done piecemeal, and that's the difference between Rocket Ship and other public schools. For example, my daughter goes to Crocker Highlands Elementary in Oakland, where they're using a math program called Alex. And the day is not structured around the computer lab time. It actually, they only go to the lab maybe two or three times a week, and it's only for 30-minute blocks. I'm not sure what the relationship is between what the teachers are teaching in class and what they're actually doing. I can say that our school's scores have actually increased in math a great deal. I also just want to throw a note of caution, too, is, you know, some critics say that their Rocket Ship and a lot of this blended learning kind of adaptive software model has a big focus on pushing scores higher and we should just kind of be...
We had Diane Ravitch on recently, and yeah. You know, her whole argument is we need to get away from all this emphasis on tests.
Yes. So, I mean, there's definitely that argument to be made is why this intense focus on scores. And others would say, you know, for low-income immigrant families where this is their only chance to be able to catch up, you know, by being able to experiment with this kind of software.
Well, let me find out what you, our listeners, think about blended learning, hybrid learning it's also called, or any questions you might have, you can direct to our guests, Anna Tentakulis and Tina Barsagian. And we do welcome your phone calls. Our toll-free number is available to you, whether you're listening now on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Feel free to join us. It's 866-733-6786. Again, your toll-free calls are welcome at 866-733-6786. There are other ways of communicating with us. If you have questions or comments and joining our conversation, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or you can go to our Facebook page. And increasingly, schools are combining traditional face-to-face classroom instruction with computer activities, and this approach is known as blended or hybrid learning. That's what we're talking about. Real questions. Are schools who employ blended learning emphasizing technology over teachers? And we're talking to a couple of education reporters who did a program, did a piece for California Report on this. And let's hear from a teacher on this who has something to say about it.
I can tell that my students are learning when they're able to apply the knowledge beyond just the answer to a problem. If they're able to explain their thinking more than just, oh, the next number is 106. I want them to explain why, and that's a really critical component to actual number sense, and it's also a critical component of them being able to build upon that knowledge.
A lot of these teachers are, Teach for America people with two-year contracts, aren't they? So you got a lot of idealism there.
Yeah, I mean, this teacher that you just heard from, her name was Alana Mednick, and she's a math teacher. And she's one of those young teachers, has a lot of energy, connects with the kids really well. She's from Teaching for America, and she embraces innovation. You know, you have a lot of young people who love this style. They say, you know, the old approach to teaching where you're sitting and you're listening to the teacher, that's just no longer the case anymore. You have to realize that technology is here in whatever form. You have to incorporate it to help students move forward because that's what the world, this is the world that these students live in. At the same time, you're getting pushback from veteran teachers who believe that, you know, technology is great. It's great the way you can maybe incorporate it into the lesson plan, but it's just a tool. You shouldn't restructure the day, like in the case of Rocket Ship, to where kids are getting essentially a teacher assistant in the form of a computer. And so you do have a lot of that young and old kind of pushback on technology. Technology brings this tension, but it's always been there, you know, whether it was like using classroom films in the class, you know, or something else, you know, bringing in a speaker. There's always been something that teachers don't like because they don't have full control of. And that's, again, going back to this idea of rocket ship, is that it is really redefining the role of a teacher. You always think of a teacher in the front of the class, instructing their students, being in charge of every aspect of that learning process. And experts and technology experts today say that just is no longer the case, that teachers can focus on what they know what to do best, which is introducing concepts, and you can kind of hand off these exercises, what they call kill and drill exercises, because you're, you know, doing problems and a lot of busy work, and you can leave that to the technology and other web-based tools.
Now, this is more student-centric. There's no question about that, and that's always also been a very heated debate about whether teaching or pedagogy should be more student-centric or more pedagogical from the teacher. I'm also reminded of something that came up in the conversation with Diane Ravitch, which is another element of the controversy here, and that is there are people like the late Ted Rozak who believe very strongly that too much computer use can make kids less creative. Now, we're talking about enhancing critical thinking, but then there's that whole question of what does this do for their creative thinking? Let's bring our callers in, and we'll go first, Megan, to you. Good morning.
Good morning. I've really enjoyed the program thus far. I wanted to introduce quickly, if people are interested in this, Disrupting Class is a book that I found really interesting about blended and online learning. And I wanted to ask the panelists about the difference between technology-rich schools and blended schools, which kind of implies the Innosight Institute talks about it as any paced learning. So the difference between, you know, throwing a computer game in for 30 minutes and really allowing students to work at their own pace, using mastery as the variable instead of time.
Well, I mean, I believe when you talk about technology rich, I think you're talking about just the number of kind of technological tools are available to kids versus, you know, really incorporating it deliberately, like into the syllabus of a class. And what I found for the most part, and I don't know if this answers your question, and Tina, please feel free to add anything you'd like to. But when we do talk about taking this to scale, what I see in traditional public schools is a lot of the tech-rich type of stuff. I mean, they do get a lot of today. Schools do get a lot of grants and money to build up their infrastructure, their, you know, whether it's laptops or it's a smart board, which is like a blackboard, but it's you kind of use a computer to manipulate it, or it's just other kind of web-based
tools. Or adding iPod touches or iPads in the classroom. So those are sort of addendum technologies that are added to it, but not necessarily highly engineered into the school day as they are with some blended learning schools.
Let me thank the caller. I want to go to more calls, but here's concern from listeners. As you might imagine, a web comment says, online education is big business and is pushing this on cash-strapped schools as a way to save money. Educational quality is an afterthought. Another listener writes, in this type of learning, who is held accountable for results? Is the program subject to any value-added evaluation? If students do not learn, are the developers and or adopters of the program penalized in any way? Or, as I suspect, is the teacher still held accountable?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really hot-button issue, teacher accountability and evaluation. With Rocketship, I can say that they are actually working with the software developers in customizing the software for their students. So anytime they see that something's
they being
not,
the teachers themselves or the administrators?
The administrator and the software experts at Rocketship, because again, this is a Silicon Valley company. This is founded by a Silicon Valley veteran, John Danner. And so they are working with these adaptive software companies like Dreambox Learning and Tenmarks to continue to refine the program for the kids. And they're always also bringing in new programs too, trying in the best ones that they think fit
but,
best.
I mean, I think that does bring up the question here is that regulation of these type of either software programs, online learning in general, is not moving as fast as, you know, what is being developed for schools. So regulation is still far behind with this stuff, and that's a valid concern. The other thing I'd want to say is that the jury's still, I mean, from what I've read in the reports that I read, the jury is still kind of out on online learning, whether it's distance learning. Rocketship obviously is doing great in terms of its state test scores, if you measure student success by state test scores. But it's just interesting because you have these strong developments, yet you have a governor like Governor Jerry Brown just saying that we need to scale back on standardized testing. Yes, let's embrace some type of reform, but keep it to the fundamentals of what really works in the classroom. And so, you know, that's obviously people feel very strongly about that human connection and the loss of the human connection.
Well, we'll make some more human connections with our callers, and we'll go to Sunnyvale. Ray, you're on. Good morning.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say, you know, I actually work at a company, one of our, I think we're used in one or more of the Rocket schools. And I want, the point was made a bit, but you know, it's not a matter of teachers or software because, you know, if you go to a school, they use something like Open Court, they're turning teachers into computers. They should let computers be computers. They should let teachers teach, not do rote work, as so many of them are being asked to do. I also wanted to make the point, you know, that I support charter schools in general, but I was on the school board in Sunnyvale a decade ago, and charter schools get to ignore about two-thirds of the Ed Code. Public schools could do very well if we could ignore two-thirds of the Ed Code, too. You know, if we could just look at goals and not be micromanaged on implementation. So I just wanted to make that point.
Ray, I thank you for making those points. Good to hear from you. We'll go right to another caller, and Lauren joins us from Santa Rosa. Hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, there's many school districts here in Northern California that just don't have the funding to implement technology, whether it's technology rich or blended schools, and I was wondering how can these classrooms and these schools implement this technology that seems to connect with the students and the learning so well without funding?
Yeah, now even if we get tremendous results and everybody gets behind this and starts thinking it's the way to go, in the public schools, there's tremendous variation in terms of the amount of resources or revenue.
I'll tell you how it worked at my daughter's school, Oakland Unified School District. This, you know, the Alex math program that I mentioned earlier was funded by the PTA. It was very simply, you know, one of the PTA members found out about it, heard great things, and, you know, raised the money for it, and we were able to bring it into our public school. And I think it really has to be embraced by the principal. It has to be embraced by teachers. It has to be embraced also by school administrators. So there are so many different angles to approach this with. There's another great organization called Donors Choose, and a lot of teachers have gone to donorschoose.org to ask for funding for classroom supplies and, you know, of course, technology. Tech gadgets can be part of that, too.
But the caller raises a good question in that you're right. A lot of public school districts, they're getting their budgets totally slaughtered. So how do you bring technology into a classroom? Ultimately, it does depend on a really strong foundation, like a foundation for a school that raises money for that school, nonprofits in the neighborhood, grants from the federal or state government. The Obama administration has a huge push on trying to incorporate technology into the classroom. So you have these really competitive grants that schools go to. But if you don't have that willpower at a school, you're not going to see the kind of tech tools that another school might benefit from. And one more point in the idea of replacing teachers with computers. You know, San Francisco just hosted this huge conference that Jeb Bush, who is a former Republican governor of Florida, he's now kind of the big poster child, or at least the man in front of this movement of getting more tech into the classroom. And what the teachers that don't like this necessarily say, they believe that this is an organized effort to make profit now, technological profit within the setting of a school to replace teachers.
Yeah, we heard that from a First Web comment that I read, in fact.
Exactly.
And again, Anna Tentakulis is an education reporter for KQED News, and Tina Barsagian is editor of MindShift, a KQED blog covering education and technology. Let's go to more calls. And we go to Vince. Vince, this seems like a good opportunity from your perspective, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't be more excited. I started high school in 82, and it just seems like there hasn't been a lot of, I graduated, of course, in 86, but there just has been a gap in terms of innovation in the classrooms. And I tell you, I did not enjoy school. I know a lot of folks that went to school with me, even my kids these days. I got a 15, a 12, and a 10-year-old. And if we could bring this kind of innovation, this type of creativity to the classroom environment, I think it'd be a huge win for kids across the board. In terms of the technology component, technology costs are, you know, really a fraction of what they were back in the late 80s. And I don't think that's a huge issue. I think it's more finding that right mix of teachers and technology to really create a better learning environment.
Well, thank you, Vince. I mean, the key is the balance between the two, clearly. But I'm interested when he uses, again, the word creativity. I mean, how much creativity is really engendered by this? It's pretty much math. It's used largely for math and reading, isn't it, at this point?
Yeah. I think there is the criticism that we're focusing a lot on math and literacy.
And
for the test scores, yeah. I know that there's PE also in the class, in the school day, set aside time for PE. And I know they bring different kinds of...
This isn't virtual PA. This is actual PA.
This is actually running around on the playground. they also, they also do project-based learning within the classrooms, too. So there's a lot of tactile kind of building things and talking over things. And I know art is brought in wherever they can. But I'm not sure if art has been set aside as part of the school day. The one thing I want to also just add about teacher time versus computer time is the kids at Rocket Ship actually get the same amount of time with their teachers as other kids do in most schools. It's a longer school day, so it's from 8 to 4, which is definitely harder for the smaller kids. But, they spend a total of 100 minutes in the computer lab. And the rest of the time, they're with their teachers and their peers. So it's not like, the computers are swallowing the kids whole at this point.
But and you've mentioned this already, it is a very strong emphasis on math and reading. And so when you talk about creativity with technology, I think, at least what I've seen teachers try to get at that is with doing some type of hands-on project in the classroom. They kind of learn their exercises, say for to build a little house. They'll build a little house based on a lot of the practice exercises that they've gotten either online and kind of the fundamentals that they've learned with their teacher. And they'll build they'll build a little house. So that's an example of the type of creativity that lends itself.
And you can listen to Anna and Tina's story at californiareport.org, and you can continue this discussion on our website, kqed.org, and on our Facebook page. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Anna Tentakulis, education reporter for KQED News, and Tina Barsagian, editor of MindShift. That's a KQED blog that covers education and technology, and you can find out more about it by going to mindshift.kqed.org. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program. We have another hour ahead. We're going to talk about pain in the next hour. I'm thinking 49ers, but we're talking about chronic and acute pain with some pain experts and the differences in gender where pain is concerned. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Farrow, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.